Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, PC gaming, the whole jazz, you know it, including news, rumors, and conversation around our damn good video games. And you can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate, review us, all that jazz, wherever you get a podcast at. Let me know if we're not on one that you listen to and you want to be on, want us to be on. Let me know. We'll get us on there. And of course, be sure to follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games like, and our dope giveaways. I am your host, as always, Travis White, aka Travelist, on most internet platforms. Joining me, my partner in crime, up co-pilot Mike Peapack, back again after a hiatus last week on vacation.
Quote unquote, because I worked the whole time, but yes.
Right. Technically. No, I'm definitely home. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm allowed to work from wherever as long as I have internet access.
Yeah, technically, that's the beauty of working remote. But as always, since you're now a week backed up, now I really got to ask you, even though you probably didn't play too much last week, what's good, what's going on, and of course, what have you been playing?
Yeah,
You played IRL. Last week.
Yeah, I did a lot of IRL stuff last week, obviously. But as far as like gaming is concerned, with my new schedule that I've kind of taken for work, it doesn't leave me a lot of time for playing. Well, it leaves me a bit of time for playing video games, but not as much as I would like. The only time I've really been playing is, I mean, we played the other night for a little bit. We played Fortnite again. We played some Hunt Showdown again. Always not steady in the rotation, but always good options. For me, mostly, I've just really been playing MLB The Show 22 because I've been doing the road to the show. That's a lot of fun. And sometimes, like at work, if I want to take like a 10 or 15 minute break, I just have my Xbox booted up and I can just play a couple games. And the way they have it set up where I'm like a utility player, like Shohei Ohtani, that I pitch and hit. So like, or I pitch and play the field. So it's kind of nice. The way they have it set up is like after you finish a game, there's just a button that says play next game. So you just keep it rolling. So you can really start to rack up a lot of games pretty quickly. Pitching obviously takes a long time. And now that the universal DH is in, you don't hit whenever you pitch anymore. But like pitching takes a little while. But other than that, man, like playing games of MLB The Show, whenever you're just playing in the field and hitting, it just they just go so quickly because you just hit play next game, play next game, play next game. So I'll do some work, whatever. If I want to take a quick break because I just need a second, I can squeeze a game of hitting in there, especially when I'm like DHing because you literally only hit. I've been just genuinely enjoying the game a lot. Now, I haven't been really playing, like I haven't played online against people or anything like that. I'm like strictly a road to show player. So I'm pretty casual when it comes to it, but no, I've been enjoying it a lot. It's been a good time, and it always kind of quenches my thirst for baseball content because unfortunately our professional team is such a joke that I don't really pay attention to baseball that much, except for the minor league team that is near where I live now in Fredericksburg. So it's good because it's still probably my favorite sport. Even though I enjoy hockey and golf a lot, I mean, I still think baseball is probably my favorite. If I got to play actual baseball in a fast pitch league where people still threw overhand and stuff, I'd probably still prefer that over any other sport. It's just always been the sport I enjoyed the most. So, yeah, I mean, that's really all I've been playing. What about you? What have you been playing? I know what you were playing last night.
Yeah, that is true. Before I get into that, though, I do want to comment on MLB The Show topic, though, because I keep telling myself I need to hop on there because I love the show. It's probably, to be honest, I think it is, as of right now, the best sports franchise in gaming right now. I think, at least from a quality standpoint, a polish standpoint, I used to think that NHL was, but that's really kind of started to fall in you know, granted, I haven't played in the past few years, but I was at a point where I was just so sick of the level of just inconsistency that was really coming out. Yeah, literally.
By packs.
Right, yeah. There was just no to the base game. And really, that's across the board with all of EA Sports' titles for the most part, that they're pumped out at such a quick pace and they're little is done usually, even though there will be marketing buzzwords around saying, you know, new things, updates to the engine and this and that and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. A lot of that is, to my opinion, a lot of buzz speak and a lot of buzzwords and, you know, just kind of not really putting your mouth money where your mouth is for that. But the one consistent, though, that I feel like we have had has been MLB The Show. Somebody who plays on PlayStation as well and who has picked up the show multiple times, you know, being on PlayStation platforms in recent years. And I think it is from quality. Like, that's what just makes me so happy and what pissed me off for so long, that as somebody who also is a huge baseball fan, I want to be able to have that. Like, trust me, I love playing arcade sports titles. That's probably my go-to anymore if I'm going to play sports titles. But at the same time, too, I do love, like you as well, I used to love playing Be a Pro, and I still do. And especially Road to the Show with MLB is fucking fantastic. It is fucking great to get in there and play that. But it made me so happy when finally the MLB kind of, you know, forced the hand a little bit of Sony to then say, okay, if you want to have the exclusivity to develop these games, we can't have it. We can't have the MLB license tied up. We want to expand that. So it's great to actually be able to see that now kind of come to fruition, where we're getting it all on all platforms, because it does suck. And not just for Xbox, but Xbox, PC, Switch, like all of the major platforms that could be supported with the MLB license weren't for the longest time, where you're seeing that with the NFL, MLB, with soccer. Like, it sucks that that's not accessible across the board. So it's great to see that now that's available. I need to jump into the newest season of it. And I'm like you, I want to play some Road to the Show. So I need to jump in there and do that. But I did want to comment on that, because every week I feel like I'm saying that, and it's always been something else pops up. Like, for example, like you were hinting at, Mike, what I was fucking playing last night, fucking Fallout 3 Game of the Year edition, obviously, but because no, you might be able to buy the regular edition still, but we're really but yes, playing a little Fallout 3 for the first time in years, and I almost sent it to our group chat that I was like, after I was playing, because I've been playing it for a few nights now, and I guess it just because I hadn't been so close to, I've just been in that kind of echo chamber of Fallout 4 for so long that if I'm going to play a Fallout, that typically was it. It was, you know, in recent years, the most accessible given the hoops that you'll have to go through for on the PC side, at least the Steam version up until recently, that you need to go through and get the mod for to remove games with Windows Live. And, you know, there's a screen tearing issue that is in the Steam version as well on PC, that if you have a high refresh monitor like we do, you know, it's hard to play that game because you have to go through so many hoops with how the physics are tied to the gameplay and the frame rate. It's once you get it sorted out, it's great. But because of that, Fallout 4 was always the much more accessible one to get on modern platforms. So typically, if I wanted my Fallout fix, I'd go to that. But you know what? I was like, you know, I really am itching to get in there. And just from being away from that game for so long and being in that echo chamber of Fallout 4, it's crazy how much, I don't want to say this in a way that, because I'm still very much a huge fan of Bethesda, it's crazy the detail of writing and the approach to writing in Fallout 3 that was taken compared to Fallout 4. And I know it's very, you know, we've seen it for how many years now, talked about there's, you know, oh, it's very linear. It's not very expansive in terms of your dialogue options and whatnot in Fallout 4. But it never was that glaring to me, I guess, in recent years, because I've been around it so much and I haven't played through Fallout 3 as much in recent years, just because of the fact of it being so inaccessible. But kind of having my, oh, I want to go back through and play at least all of the mainline Bethesda Game Studios titles before Starfield comes out, and replay all of them. kind of got me on that track of, you know what, I better start on that one. So went and started on Fallout 3, and I was like, you know what, I do want to get in there, you know, and get to playing that again. And it just is refreshing in a way that it's nice to be able to play a Fallout game that has that flexibility still. And sure, a lot of people will be like, well, you know, there's the Bethesda Fallout games, and then there's the Interplay Fallout games, and what truly is a Fallout game? Yeah, yeah, I don't care about that shit. To me, though, to our our generation, I would say, these are the Fallout games. Like, this is, like, and, you know, probably more for your, like, brother's generation, that age group, you know, maybe, like, 5 to 10 years older than us, that, you know, maybe not, will not be their Fallout. But to us, this is our Fallout. And it's really, really, really refreshing to kind of get in there and see and just kind of live in that era of, okay, this was Bethesda running at full steam, and just they were not missing with every pitch that came in was knocked out of the park for the most part. But yeah, once I got in like a couple nights ago, I was like, and got it to a state that I, you know, it was appropriate to play on modern hardware, I was like, I gotta play through this now. Like, there's no chance. Like, I even dropped, I was, another game that I've been starting up, that I talked about last week when you weren't on the show, Mike, I finished up Rise of the Tomb Raider, and just kind of on a whim wanted to replay, or go through and actually finish playing that for the first time. So that I instantly went into Shadow and really enjoying that, but there's a lot of issues with that game in DirectX 12, and I don't think they've ever been updated. Like, it's really weird. You have to turn DirectX 12 on, then turn it off, then shut your game down, then turn it back on, and then it works in terms of, if you don't, your game's going to crash like every 15 minutes, which is really frustrating, because I was even thinking, like, as I'm playing this, I'm like, you know, we have relatively beefy PCs for, you know, normal Joe Blow. We don't have top of the line necessarily, but I got a 2080 and, you know, a decent processor and 32 gigs of RAM and shit like that. Like, my PC can fucking rip a little bit. But yeah, I wasn't expecting, like, oh, it's... But at the same time, I saw how it ran with Rise of the Tomb Raider in 1440. I'm like, yeah, you know, it was decent, but, like, I wish I could have gotten more out of there. I expected more. Starting up Shadow of the Tomb Raider, that game was, like, fucking buttery, buttery, buttery. The optimization on that is buttery smooth. I mean, it was, like... Mm-hmm. I was getting like 160 frames in some areas on 1440 ultra settings. Like, sheesh. Just with the DLSS that was built into that is just ridiculous with them. And I know the game was kind of, I know NVIDIA was really leaning in heavy and using that game as their like benchmark and toolbox to kind of test a lot of the stuff with the 20 series of graphics cards that went out. It was right around that time. So I get it, but at the same time, I was not expecting that. So the game runs beautiful, but yeah, I was balls deep into that, and Fallout 3 made me just fucking jump right off that, because god damn it. Like, the biggest fear that I have with Starfield is that, not that it's necessarily, oh, we're going to get Fallout 4, or oh, all we're going to get is something that is a bland, or a traditional Bethesda title with a space skin over top of it. And I'm not
great,
which to me, I'm like, hey, that's no, like, if that's the worst, that's great, because I'm happy with that. Like, I love Bethesda RPGs. I think they have a secret sauce, especially with their world building and whatnot, and interactivity with Western RPGs that not many have been able to touch or recreate. But at the same time, if my biggest fear is, if that's all it is, that worries me for Elder Scrolls 6, because I want that progression, I want that next step from them, and I think they are going to give us that. But playing Fallout 3, playing Oblivion not that long ago for the umpteenth time, you know, mess around Morrowind, it reminds me that the secret sauce is still there, and I still feel very confident about Starfield. I feel pretty confident even still that it's going to come out this year, because traditionally, and now granted, the state that we get that game in, who knows, but it'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays out. But it just really, it reminds me that of why I love that studio so much, why I love that team so much, that it's just, it, to me, it's just wild that we potentially could finally get that reincarnation of that era of Bethesda coming in now with you know, the biggest update to the Creation Engine we've seen. Really, the Creation Engine 2. So a new engine, finally, quote unquote, that we're going to actually get that isn't necessarily just hung on together by gum and some shoestring and whatnot. But
yeah, so I mean, I know people on that listen to the show might like be rolling their eyes when we talk about Bethesda, because some people might not have the same opinion that we have as far as the game. Some people might have really enjoyed Skyrim and Fallout 4. And I mean, you're okay to have that opinion, but it is crazy to go back to a game like Fallout 3. Now, I know Adam prefers Fallout New Vegas, and for good reason. It's a great game. But Obsidian worked on that, obviously, so it's a little bit different. But to go back to a game like Fallout 3, to go back to a game like Oblivion, and just see the focus they had on storytelling more so than anything else is just... It's a nice like nostalgia bomb to go do, right? Like, it's nice to go do because you really get to enjoy Bethesda at its best. But also, it's kind of one of those things where, for me, it is a little sad to see where Bethesda has gone. And not that they don't make good games, because I can't sit here and say that Fallout 4 wasn't a good game, especially for recent day standards. Mm-hmm. But I would really like to put the caveat that, like, there are good games and then there are good Bethesda games. And unfortunately, I just don't think that Skyrim and Fallout 4 have been their best works or even close to it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it comes down to a laziness in the writing, because there are some good stories going on there. It just feels like, as far as their work with the engines, like, it just feels like they kind of just settled for what they had and it is what it is. So I'm really excited to see whatever they come out with Starfield, because I'm sure it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to have a different engine. But I'm really pumped that, you know, they're going to be writing the game again. And hopefully, you know, because it's something different that they've ever done, hopefully it's kind of reinvigorated them. And then hopefully they do Elder Scrolls 6 justice, because if it's the same or worse than Skyrim, I'm going to be a little disappointed. I mean, I'm still going to play it, but I would really like to see them kind of return to form as far as some of the twists and turns that their games used to have anyway.
Yeah, and you kind of saying that too makes me think, like, I agree with you that it's like there are going to be people, there is a good differentiator when we do say, like, oh, you know, Fallout 4 was a bad game, Skyrim was a bad game, or which I typically am not in the camp, but you have a different opinion on Fallout 4 than I do to a degree, like things like that. But at the same time, like, there are, I do agree that comparative to older works, you know, yeah, there is a good Bethesda game, bad Bethesda game, or so-so Bethesda game, or they have their own. It's comparing, you know, you're pretty good whenever you're comparing your, you know, games that are traditionally still viewed as, this is a very good game to across the board, this is a good game, but you're viewing it compared to the other things that have come out from the same studio that you're saying, well, compared to this that they did, it's like kill your babies kind of thing, where it's hard to really say that, oh, this is a bad game, when you know, well, no, it's a good game, but compared to what they've given us in the past, yeah, or from what I like out of it, or you like out of it, or whatever, like, I do agree with that it is kind of hard to see. And I think, though, at the same time, though, like you were saying, I do have hope in Starfield. I do have hope that, you know, they have been very vocal. I mean, just even watching, every now and then I'll watch, when I get on these Bethesda kicks with their games, I'll go back and watch the NoClip documentary that Danny O'Dwyer did with Bethesda on their history and whatnot, and them talking about multiple multiple heads within departments in there on the dev team saying, like, you know, we understand that people have said, like, hey, Morrowind was our best game that we've ever put out because of X, Y, and Z, you know, whether it's the writing, the tone, the CRPG nature of it, the, you know, traditional, depth that comes with an RPG compared to Oblivion, where Oblivion kind of started to meld a little bit of, hey, you're getting this RPG, but you're also getting a more cinematic experience because we have the tech to provide you with that now. to, you know, a Skyrim where it is more of an action RPG, you know, it gets more into action adventure RPG style compared to a traditional hardcore RPG. And then in Fallout 4, kind of even taking that a step further where the linearity comes into it a little bit more, you know, so I get when people say those type of things and I understand it and it sounds like so do they. And I think that's why they've been so cognitive of, hey, we got to really, you're not going to hear anything until we're ready to show you something, yada, yada. And why I think they've been sitting so long take Fallout 76 out of it, because that Rockville helped a little bit with it, but it was much more an Austin thing in Montreal. But at the same time, like, this is the first true Rockville, Maryland, Bethesda Game Studios title we're getting since Fallout 4. There's a reason why it's taken this long. And it's a reason why so much has been done, because I think they've been very cognitive of the feedback they've gotten from the player base for a long time. And I don't want to say like, hey, this is make or break with Starfield for them, because I don't think it is. But I think for the first time, I'll be hesitant with Elder Scrolls, like truly, truly hesitant on what the game's going to be and what direction it's going if Starfield doesn't deliver. That's my biggest worry with it. But
yeah, because you kind of have to temper your expectations, kind of right. Like we did with like Halo Infinite, for example. Like once you get enough bad stuff from someone, you have to just kind of realize and kind of set your expectations accordingly. And unfortunately, I agree with you, because Fallout 4 would be the first Bethesda game that I never truly finished Morrowind, Fallout 4, for all intents and purposes, in my adult life, is like the first game that I never, or I guess since I was like, 15, that I never actually finished, right? Like, every other Bethesda game that I've played through complete, Fallout New Vegas, I didn't actually do a 100%. I know with Fallout 3, I think I had all the achievements, because you got to shoot him in the head, which was one of the harder ones. I think I did it all. But yeah, I just, you know, never finished Fallout 4, because I just never had that drive to do it, which is really a shame, because it's the first time in history in Bethesda games that I didn't finish.
Right. Yeah. But you, speaking of Halo, Mike, just before we get into our big topic.
Oh, God.
That's why I'm getting it out of the way with now. I'm getting it out of the way with now because I know how you feel about it and yada, yada, you know.
I was trying to have a pause. I was trying to be a good girl, Marty.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Nobody's going to get that joke. Like, six people in the world are. But anywho. So it was announced last week. And obviously, you're not being here. I wanted to kind of wait to touch on it. It's obviously not our big topic of the show if you're seeing, you know, the fucking thumbnail and the podcast title and whatnot. It's not our big topic of the show, but I wanted to get your feedback on where we're kind of sitting right now with Halo Infinite, now that we've seen season 2 and what's to come. Mm-hmm. Just kind of giving a breakdown for everyone here. This is an article from Ryan Dinsdale over in IGN, just kind of summing everything up so we know. There was a new trailer that dropped. They kind of showcased Lone Wolves, the new season that's coming on May 3rd, I believe, and with some new modes. Halo Infinite developer 343 Industries has revealed three new modes coming to Season 2, Lone Wolves. These are headlined by the classic Halo mode King of the Hill, which arrives on May 3rd, alongside two brand new modes, Last Spartan Standing and Land Grab. King of the Hill dates back to the original Halo game in 2001, and while players can recreate the original mode in custom games, the standard mode is returning to Infinite with a twist. Instead of just having one part of the battleground the players fight over, a new hill will spawn when the previous one is captured. Whoever takes the hill by spending uncontested time on it earns a point, and the team with the most points at the end of the match wins. The Lone Wolves-themed Last Spartan Standing is less complicated, with 343 Industries simply describing the objective with one word, survive. The free-for-all mode sees 12 players spawn on big team battle maps with a confined loadout and just 5 respawns. That means game over when they're gone. The match ends when only one player is left. Sounds similar to something. The escalation slayer mechanic from the previous Halo games returned in Last Spartan Standing, similar to the gun game from Call of Duty, where getting a kill grants a player a better weapon. Finally, land grab in a new mode reminiscent of territories from Halo 2 and 3, where players fight in teams to capture various neutral zones that appear around the map, and the first team to capture 11 wins. Halo Infinite Season 2 will also bring new maps, timed events, and a fresh battle pass to the game. It's also expected to fix the lack of content that has been the community has been, quote, simply out of patience with, 343 Industries said earlier this month. So, Mike, where do you kind of stand if you've looked into it? I know you've kind of put Halo Infinite on the back burner right now, like many, for, you know, justified reasons, even 343 kind of saying it with a lack of content and where the game's at in the support. So they roll out season two. They show, they pull back the curtain. They're showing you everything that's here. Where do you see this being? A step forward, a step back? Two steps forward, one step back. Where are you kind of sitting at after seeing, okay, here's what's coming, at least in the immediate future right now. So what, 2 weeks from now?
Yeah. I guess for me, it's something where I see some of the content that's coming out, and it's just, it's not really anything that's going to drive the player base up because, I mean, is there going to be... Are there going to be people that probably hop in to enjoy some of the new game modes? I'm sure. Of course, leave it to 343 to take a game mode that's been fucking a game mode since Halo 1, since the year 2000 and or like 2001, for them to be like, oh, well, we better just go ahead and fuck it up real quick. Let's just make the rules different, which, like, to be fair, the oddball changes they made were better for competitive play, especially for the game. Like, in older titles, especially in competitive play, like Halo 3 and Halo 2, Halo 2 was a little crazy. I think you had to hold the ball for 5 minutes. It was a little nuts. So games would get out of hand. And then in Halo 3, they kind of pulled that back because it was a 250-second total. So they tried to pull that back in just a little bit. And sometimes, you know, if a team got a really strong hold and held a lot of time, especially, like, they got a big chunk of time. Like, if they got you on a stagger spawn where, like, they killed one person, 2 seconds elapses, they kill another, 2 seconds elapses, they kill another, 2 seconds elapses, they kill another. Then it's really hard for a team to really get all four up at once, which is kind of what it takes to break an oddball setup, the way the maps are generally normally set up with the ball holding positioning. So the oddball changes are good, but the King of the Hill change, I don't know. It's just not enough to get anyone involved. Whenever the game was going to be released, they were talking about having 21 maps ready to rock and roll at release. They're releasing one with Season 2, which is, like, fine. But then again, I'm pretty sure the same person who made Behemoth, the worst map potentially of all time, is the same person who designed this map. So I'm definitely not that pumped about it. We're still at a point where your anti-cheat is still pig shit. The server problems are still really bad. You pretty much have come out and said that people who say that they don't have aim assist are basically having, like, a mental case. But then they came out and said, if it is happening, like, if people are losing aim assist, it's because of a bug and not, it's like not an intended thing. So I know when I first started playing the game, I said, if you jump, you lose aim assist. So it might be something with a server desync where the server side is telling, like, the server side has the player in a different location than on your screen. So you lose aim assist because the server side is different than what you're seeing on your screen, which would make sense. I'm not saying that it's, like, justified, but it would at least be an explanation. All this is a really long, convoluted way of saying, like, the game's still fucking terrible and I'm still not going to install it. You can't just put lipstick on a pig and tell me it's, you know, Scarlett Johansson. You got to fucking actually put some effort into it.
Yeah, it was a little, and granted, I don't want to turn away new content by saying, hey, they're not giving us anything. You know, okay, they're at least, this is a stride in somewhat of the right direction. You know, it's more of a, you know, hey, I'm going to try to putt it from the fucking tee kind of thing, but instead of pulling out the driver. But at the same time, okay, you know, progress is progress, I guess, to an extent. But at the same time, you kind of look at these, and it's one of those things that King of the Hill, that should have been in from day one. Like, let's be honest. King of the Hill, a fucking staple in Halo, very much a staple in Halo multiplayer, not in their day one. How are you not necessarily, like, I just don't understand. Why wouldn't you, I don't know. It boggles my mind that some of these things are being pushed as, hey, this is new and exciting. It's like, no, well, granted, you're changing a little bit. I'll give you that. But at the same time, like, this stuff
that's the same discussion we have, like, with EA Sports, right, or other studios, where it's like they just hold content back. Mm-hmm. So after a launch, they can release it as like DLC. Like, that was the thing back in the 2013-14, if you remember correctly. Like,
yeah,
they were just withholding content from the live game so they could release it and be like, oh, look at this sick new content, and pay for it too, when it should have just been in the fucking game to begin with. It's the same thing, just you don't have to pay for it, and thank God you didn't actually have to pay for the game.
Yeah, and my big thing too of this is, this goes back to, Microsoft is one of those companies that really has just absolute fuck you money. This isn't, they are very much on the same, they are the US equivalent to Nintendo in terms of the amount of cash assets they have, where they could turn around and be like, hey, take all the time you need. Where I would have rather seen this game fucking, I just wish everything would have been pushed back a year. Like, I would have rather seen them be like, when Infinite was supposed to come out in 2020, I would have rather seen them be like, this game is just fucking indefinitely delayed. Like, you will get,
right, because remember,
whenever it launches, or whenever it launched in, you know, November or whatever, the multiplayer, just straight up be like, this is early access. You're getting early access. This will be a beta until for the foreseeable future. So you will get content as it comes, but you are getting in on the base level to help us test this and blah, blah, blah. Sell it like an early access game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have, then you buy yourself a little more. And personally, I still am in the camp of, I would have just rather seen this game fucking delayed 2 years. Like,
right. And remember, like, when we were having the discussions on whether or not this game was going to release, and you were staunch on it's coming out, mm-hmm. and I was staunch on the game fucking sucks, it can't come out. And here we are, they pushed it out anyway, and guess what? The game fucking sucks. Like,
right.
And I'm not, like, I'm not even going to be, like, a I told you so kind of guy. I'm just putting it out there that, like, I kind of called that this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I'm happy or proud that it is the way it is, because I love the franchise and I wish the game didn't stink. But, like, I said, if you don't, like, delay this game, the game's fucking terrible. Like, it's just not going to be a good game. You're going to be in a bad spot. You got an initial rush of content creators, and then you just didn't have an anti-cheat ready. You weren't ready for the launch that you had, and it's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, now they did say, like, they kind of masked it by saying, oh, this is a beta game and whatnot. But, like, for fuck's sakes, it was 6 years and $500 million. How much more time do you fucking need to make the game? Like,
yeah, but at the same time, too. And normally I side with that. Okay, you're at least upfront about that, yada, yada. But at the same time, too, this was reviewed, both multiplayer and campaign, by multiple, you know, headlining outlets in games industry. It was also given truly it is officially out. Like, it's released.
Mm-hmm.
The release date it is a fully released game. December 8th, 2021, this game was released. Because that's when
no
campaign,
co-op, no Forge. Right. Theater mode's fucking terrible. Like,
and that's where it's one thing if it's like, okay, you get into the game and it's like, hey, there's no battle royale. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Cool. If you put that in a year later, cool. Even if it's like, okay, yeah, we only have 2 big team battle maps, but we have 10 eight like standard size maps for matchmaking. Okay, cool. But don't, like, it's things like, oh, we don't have these external or these extra things that typically are just kind of like, hey, this is going to come in a map pack, or hey, this is going to come out in our, you know, these are true things that we'll put out in seasonal content updates. Like, these are true things that you look at a live service titles like Fortnite, Destiny, you know, even PUBG and, like, other bigger free-to-play titles that are, you know, Battle Royale-centric, Apex. Like, they do the special, you know, playlists that'll come out, but that's seasonal content for the most part. Like, it's not base game content. Like, even yeah, there's not a lot of content in X, Y, and Z game, you know, or you hear about, like, you know, Fortnite, it doesn't have X, Y, and Z. Well, at least whenever it did come out in early access, it had content. There were multiple ways to go about it. The full game was there. Like, you're getting a full game, but it is the early access. Like, you're going to get the base game of this is right here. We're going to build on top of that, and we want you to be here for the journey. Where this game very much was staples of this franchise, that why people buy into this, why people buy these products, ways that you physically play this game in a standard way, such as co-op and Forge, which Forge is a staple in fucking Halo now, aren't there. Why did you release this game? Why? Like, I would have rather, even, I would have never done this, but fuck, I would have rather seen them be like, hey, campaign's coming out, multiplayer's coming out in 6 months. Okay, okay, all right, cool, I'll play the campaign now, that's great, and it'll get me hyped about multiplayer, and then you could release multiplayer, and it'd be a whole new wave of Halo. Cool, that's fine, but just the thing that's going to keep this game going and going and going, because campaign isn't, at least from what we've seen and what we thought we were going to see from this game, campaign isn't coming with more content, even though I could have bet the fucking farm that it would have, because given how the game is presenting itself as Halo Infinite, and it's an open world map, and there's areas grayed off on the map that are clear as day, but you don't want to talk about, like, things boggle, like, now my brain's hurting. Like, maybe I shouldn't have brought this up.
You can't risk trying to put yourself in the 343 boardroom or in any of those discussions, because there's just no way that anyone that has any brain cells or logic to rub together are in any of these decisions. There's no shot.
And I personally think the bones of this game are good. Like, I think the mechanics are, this game's fucking fun when it works. Like, I have fun playing this game personally. And I think on a casual level too, this game is in a, like, from the bones of this game, it could be a really fucking great game. Like, it could have a, at basis, a casual audience and a large casual audience that continues to play this game.
It's a better base, like, it's a better
out of the box experience, I should say, I guess.
It's the best out of box experience we've had since maybe, I mean, even Halo 2 had its flaws upon its release. Like, you had to melee people 6 times, and the Magnum pistol killed people in like 4 shots, but it shot, its time to kill was like a second. Like, I mean, it might be the best core gameplay that we've had. It's definitely better than Halo 3's core gameplay, because before there was the beatdown trades with the latency, that was really frustrating. So, and the core gameplay of Halo 3 is just very slow with all the equipment and stuff, and just not that great. But the core gameplay is there. And you just, and again, something that Snipedown has kind of ranted and raved about on his Twitter, and some of the other pros have too, it's like the day of the quote unquote like arena shooter, I guess you would call it, is kind of long gone. Like, it'll catch people's attention for a little bit, but for the most part, you have to have a battle royale involved with one of these first person shooters, because even though people might not want to admit it, you need content creators playing your game to keep eyes on it. And there's just no reason for someone to, there's no reason for any of the pros to stream matchmaking. It's not a good experience. I think the player totals dipped in Halo Infinite below Halo MCC officially for like the past 2 weeks. I think there's been more people playing MCC than Infinite. And of course, it's awesome that MCC is still getting support, and I'm happy for that. But at the same time, how fucking pathetic is that? That the player base is so small that MCC gets like 9,000 concurrent players, and it's more than Infinite.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no redeeming qualities to having content creators or people grind the game, because there's no match, there's like nothing to play for. You didn't even put a champion rank in it like you had in H5. I mean, the issues really go on and on, and I could go on and on all day, but the point of the matter is, like, people aren't just going to sit there and grind arena matchmaking when there's no champion, there's like no skin, like you can't even get any like neat skins for being a top ranked player. So what the fuck's the point of playing it? No one's just going to sit there and play it. And then because the player base is so small and your matchmaking was so bad for so long, half the time you were getting players that were way completely and totally outside of their skill zone playing in your, in like my Onyx, like rank 2000 Onyx matches. I'm getting like diamonds, and then I'm flaming them in game with my text-to-speech because they're so fucking bad. And then I get to the end of the game and they're like a diamond three. And it's like, those people shouldn't even fucking be in this game.
Right.
So there's just like no good redeeming qualities for the multiplayer.
And then, you know, they're going to cry wolf and wonder why people aren't playing the game. It's just, there's just not enough there. And hopefully in year two, they'll release they'll release more maps and they'll release a BR that'll keep players around, because like that's the only, I'm not even the biggest BR fan, but as a monotonous day-to-day grind for a professional player, they're all playing Apex behind the scenes, because right. at least it's like, it's a fresh experience almost every time. Like, yeah, you're playing on the same map, but at least like every game has different experiences on it.
Right.
There's just no like mindless, monotonous like gameplay that you can do for fun on Halo Infinite.
Right. And I think that's the big thing that a lot of arena shooters kind of face right now, like Call of Duty, like Halo, you know, in Battlefield too. Like, I think a lot of them really do kind of face that. Yeah, you could technically have, you know, you technically have different experiences every time you play, but to what extent? And I think that's what really kind of has held Battle Royales together, at least as this phase of multiplayer gaming that we're in, like this, I don't want to call it a fad, but like, cause it's clearly here to stay for the time being. But that kind of keeps it around, because you do have a lot of water cooler moments in multiplayer, or you do have more of these experiences that are a little more bombastic each time you go mm-hmm. into it. But to me, it sounds like this, the Last Man Standing game mode that they're putting in, that I think that is their battle royale. Like, it's, I hope it's not. I hope it's something a little bit more robust. And this is more of a, you know, kind of toe in the water, see what people think of this and then tweak upon it. But to me, this is their battle royale. Like, this screams, hey, this is the battle royale that you were hoping for. Like, or like, mm-hmm. this is the one that we were going to put out. So I hope it's just more of a testing to kind of get a feel on how, hey, let's give this some actual like hands-on experience to see what even remotely some of these elements of battle royale would feel like with players playing, truly playing this, you know, in multiplayer with Halo. So I don't know. And even just looking at, just bringing it up, there's more players than I thought today. There's almost 6,000 right now in game on Steam. So in Halo Infinite. Oh, wow. So
congratulations.
Right. Exactly. Big money, big prizes, you know? So anyways, Mike, let's talk about something a little more positive, at least in thought. Our bigger topic, the big topic of this week, let's talk about Portal, baby. Portal making some news, making some headlines this week. And usually it's usually kind of felt with pain, usually, because we're still waiting on yet another Portal to come out. A fan favorite Valve franchise, like many of the Valve franchises, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for sequels, or just more Valve software in general. But this week, though, a little bit more positive news to an extent, I guess, if you want to call it. It's not necessarily negative, but Portal writer said he wants to start Portal 3 because he's, quote, not getting any younger. This comes from Chris Scullion over on Video Games Chronicle. As always, link in the description. Go over there. Check out the work that all the articles we reference. Go ahead and check out all the work that the amazing writers do. Make sure you give them clicks and views, because that does matter. Trust me, it does. The co-writer of the Portal games has said that he wants Valve to start working on a third game in the series. Speaking on the Kiwi Talks podcast, Eric Wolpal, who co-wrote Portal and Portal 2, as well as such titles as Psychonauts, Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and 2, Left 4 Dead, and Half-Life Alyx, ended the show by stating, quote, "We've got to start Portal 3. That's my message to whoever." He added, quote, "I'm not getting any younger. We are reaching the point where it's crazy to think, quote, that we're going to, or it's crazy to think that we're literally going to be too old to work on Portal 3, so we should just do it." However, Wolpal also theorized earlier in the podcast that it may not be easy to get a new Portal game off the ground, despite his history writing for Valve. When asked if he'd like to make a third game, he replied, quote, "Oh yeah, I would love to. I'd work on another Portal in a second, but I can't make it happen by myself." After it was pointed out that he must have some leverage at Valve, Wolpal replied, "Oh, I could advocate for it. It might help a little bit, but the problem is Valve has 300 employees, and I don't know exactly the breakdown, how many of them are on the production side versus Steam business side versus legal versus whatever. So there's a lot of opportunity cost to taking 75 75 people and trying to get a game made. As much as it seems like Valve often is just a bunch of people sitting around spinning gin and tonics, by the pool, everybody is actually working, believe it or not. Continuing the quote, they're working all the time. It's just you don't always see the result. It doesn't always end up coming out. Or it comes out years later, it gets turned into something else. So everybody is accounted for, I guess, is what I'm saying. People are all doing something. So you'd almost have to take them, it's like a revolution, and stir up a bunch of people to leave what they're currently working on and start something else. In this case, it would be Portal 3. The host then suggested that Portal 3 would nevertheless be profitable for Valve, to which Wolpow agreed, hey, you're preaching to the choir here, you'd make some money. The problem is, you would make money, but what kind of money will you make? Are you going to make Counter-Strike GO money? Probably not. But having said that, maybe every game doesn't need to make Counter-Strike GO money. You know, Gabe, if you're listening, he smiled. Shocker. Nintendo announced in February that Portal 3 Compilation Collection, which consisted of Portal 1 and 2, will be coming to Switch later this year, bringing the series to Nintendo system for the first time. So, like I said, not necessarily negative, not necessarily positive, but Portal and just Valve software, I guess, kind of getting back into the conversation. After really Half-Life Alyx was that huge surprise to many people of, holy shit, one, Valve is making software again, and two, Valve's making a fucking Half-Life game. Granted, a VR game, and kind of, you know, cuts a lot of people out of the equation to playing that game and getting access to it, but hey, Valve is making software again, to an extent. So, Mike, where do you stand with one, Portal as a franchise? I know we all have a connection to it to some degree. Where do you kind of stand with that? Where do you stand with really this idea that, hey, obviously, these are all businesses. All game development and game production is a business, and the games industry is just a massive business. They're selling toys to an extent. Like, they have to make money. But this idea of, you know, does everything need to make live service money when you have so many of those cogs already in motion that you're able to give, you know, hey, we can make this fan favorite product that maybe isn't a live service title and doesn't have to make million, you know, it doesn't have to outsell Fortnite every day kind of thing. We could just put this product out and let it live. You know, where do you subscribe to that idea? And just really, where do you stand with the idea of Valve software for the future? Are we going to keep getting things now that kind of the wheels are back in motion again?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, it's kind of just something that I came to terms with that just might not ever get another Valve game. And it's not like they necessarily owe, they don't owe anything to the community because they've already provided such great experiences with so much history. But at the same token, you know, I'm happy to see someone that works at Valve kind of starting to try to light that fire again, saying like, hey man, I'm not getting any younger here. So we kind of just need to start making moves. And like, I basically saying like, I want to work. So let's get on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like pitter patter, let's get at her. And I'm like, I'm all for it. As far as like Portal is concerned, I had a lot of fun with Portal, 1 and 2, you know, it was a game that wasn't necessarily one that I would normally think would be a Valve game in the sense of like, generally you think of shooters and there's going to be puzzles in like Half-Life and stuff like that. But for a game to just be full puzzle mode, it was really awesome. I really enjoyed the world that they kind of built inside of the Portal universe. I mean, I'm all here for it. Like, I would probably play just about anything that Valve put out at this point in time, just because, you know, you see how bad Back 4 Blood really turned out to be. And that's not something we usually talk about on the show, but compared to Left 4 Dead, it's just Left 4 Dead 2 is still probably a better game than Back 4 Blood, which is really, really sad to admit. But it's just these individuals, whether it be Gabe, you know, they're just not, they're getting to the point where, you know, it's time to put up or shut up. If we're going to go off into the sunset, that's fine. But I'm just glad there's people inside the studio trying to mix it up a little bit and saying, hey, like, I'm not ready to you know, go out right off into the sunset yet. I still have more creativity in my system here. And I think that's probably the only way to get Valve and Gabe to really start moving in that direction, because for all intents and purposes, between the amount of money that, you know, Valve makes from CSGO, the amount of money they make from Dota, they really don't need to make any more games ever again.
No.
You would think they'd probably make a Dota 3 and a CSGO 2 or another Counter-Strike game at some point, because the technology will get dated. But at the same token, I guess they really wouldn't necessarily need to. People still play Counter-Strike 1.6, and that game's going to be, it's, you know, it's over, I guess it's 20 years old or something pretty close to it. And sometimes, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I'm just happy to see someone inside of Valve starting to say, like, hey, we're not done here yet. We got more in the tank. And I'm glad to hear it, and I can't wait to see, you know, what they come up with. And hopefully it is Portal 3, because I'm looking for something a little bit more casual, something that is really challenging mentally as far as, like, puzzles and things of that nature. I've always enjoyed puzzle games. So, you know, hopefully they do come out with a Portal 3, and hopefully they come out with a Left 4 Dead 3. Like, if they came out with, like, Portal 3, Left 4 Dead 3, the new Counter-Strike, maybe a new Team Fortress, like, I know that's a lot of development time, but if they were to drop every single one of those things and then call it a day, and I'm sure, like, Adam and other people might want to see Half-Life still make it back, but if they dropped... Hell, even if they dropped half of those titles. So give me the new Portal, hopefully. Give me a new Left 4 Dead. Give me a new Counter-Strike. And then pick whatever other game you want to make. And you guys can never make another... You guys don't have to ever make another video game again. And I'd look at Valve as potentially, like, I guess maybe the best developer ever. I think it'd be really hard to argue against them being one of, if not the best developers of all time. Just look at their games, the longevity... and just how special it was for so many people in the gaming community to play those games. And I know some of the Zoomers, if they're Zoomers that listen to us, as they're called, people that, you know, might not enjoy Counter-Strike and games of that nature, like, you don't have to, but there's a huge conglomerate of gamers that Valve games are just the creme de la creme for, you know, the... I guess kind of the days that are past, especially when it comes to community servers and Counter-Strike and TF2, if you're going to go a different direction. But for all intents and purposes, Valve's always held a special place in my heart. They always will. And if they want to put out more content, which it sounds like they do, hopefully, thank God, I'll be here to absorb it as much as possible.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's what a lot of people... And you brought up a good point of the Zoomers, like, and I'm even thinking when you're saying that, like, I wonder, to our generation, I guess, and really even a little bit younger than us, I would suspect, and really we saw a lot of, I mean, Half-Life Alyx moved fucking units. People bought indexes to play Valve or to play Half-Life Alyx. But when that was announced and what it was and everything like that, it moved the needle. I guess I think from it from this angle that if announced, like, if we saw, hey, Half-Life 3 is coming out, all we got is from Valve, they put out, you know, 3 in 2023, like, just that, people would lose their fucking minds. Like, to me, that Half-Life still has that power to, just because it's been so long and that hype is still so palpable that we've seen now that, hey, we dipped our toe in the water with Half-Life Alyx. And we left it open, from my understanding. I haven't been able to play the game because it's in VR. But we've dipped the toe in the water and we've left the story in a place that there's definitely more to explore with this in coming. That, you know, to me, I saw the reaction of that I still think that Half-Life would absolutely move numbers. It would make huge waves in the industry. It would be one of those stopping moments in the gaming industry that... Everybody's picking it up this day. It's breaking sales records, yada, yada. I think from what it sounds like, Valve is definitely something and a good follow to, if you're interested in, you know, if you're a fan of Valve and you're a fan of, you know, Half-Life and Counter-Strike and just game, like PC gaming in general, a good follow is Tyler McVicker. He's also on YouTube. He's done a lot of journalism around Valve for a long time and now does a lot of content creation and things like that, but still does a lot of deep dives into Valve and kind of Valve leaking and rumor information and kind of dispelling a lot of that. He brought up semi recently, and I believe it was like right around the end of March, that recently with Source 2 obviously being brought up alongside Half-Life Alyx and whatnot, and kind of this fire was lit under Valve again to really, you know, something within the software development arm of Valve was really kind of a fire was lit. And it was very much, you know, they have the Project Citadel and that we've heard about for a long time in, you know, rumors and whatnot, not in an official way, but there's been a lot of code found and data leaked around this Project Citadel that is kind of a, I think it's like a kind of RTS MMO experience. I don't know. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's not like a code name for, hey, it's Half-Life 3 or anything like that. But it sounds like from recently that he had brought up that originally they had CSGO 2 in the works. It was boom, not ready to go, but hey, this is getting worked on and yada yada. And then I don't know if they needed more, you know, if something they shifted eyes to something else or whatnot, and they kind of left it go. But from what he's found over the past like 6 months or so, Valve's move to the Source 2 engine has been very much accelerated. So it sounds like they are very much interested in keeping to do more software. Whether that be new IPs, whatnot, yada yada. I'm with you. I have great ties to Portal 2 and great memories with Portal, or with Portal as well, I should say, not both Portal 1 and 2 is what I'm trying to say. I still remember the first time I saw Portal. It was actually at your house. We were doing something. I can't remember what, if we were going over to Adam's or whatnot, but we had G4 on your TV. And we were like playing something on your computer or something like that. And they,
I think like I was the only one that had Citizens cable. So right. I think G4 was only on Citizens, right?
Yeah. So we'd always have it on, and they would run throughout the day. Like they would have blocks where it would just be video game trailers that they show. And I remember seeing the really early, like it was just like, I think like prototype footage of, I'm going to actually look it up now. Let me see if I can find. Yeah, here it is. The teaser for it originally that they made that was like the safety videos for Portal. And it came out, July. It's even dated on here, July 18th, 2006.
There we go.
I remember seeing this for the first time, and it was wild to see like this concept of like, oh shit, like this is more puzzle, and this is just using like the concept of what Portal actually was. I was instantly sold on. I'm like, this very much speaks to me. Like, I will very much play this game, like right off the bat. So really that idea, I love these interactive puzzles. It to me, it almost spoke like more of like, oh yeah, this is like if you wouldn't mesh physics and like physics and more science into Zelda puzzles, like this is what you probably get. So big fan of Portal since we first saw it. But to me, it's always been one of those franchises that I don't think gets the love that it deserves. And it's funny that it is actual, it's mostly coming from Valve. Like these franchises that you hear so much about with Valve, like, you know, even Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike is one of the biggest titles in the world. Dota, one of the biggest titles in the world. You rarely hear about them in the mainstream that much anymore. And it's weird because you would think with how successful they are. I mean, Valve is still, just for the fact of where CSGO is as an esport and Dota as an esport, like where these are right now, they're two of the biggest games in the world, but you never, like, Valve is always like, oh, they're not making games. And they're not, because they're supporting these titles, but at the same time, they are. Like, it's crazy to think about this just, what Steam has become, because I think you throw that in there too, like you said, they can never make another game again, and clearly they, you know, haven't been putting games out at the pace they were previously. They never have to again, because Steam is just this behemoth that will never be. They could just, you know, they just turn servers on and make it available, and boom, they're making money. Like, off every single fucking product that's ever sold on here, they're making money, and it's, they never have to make another game again, and they'll be one of the most profitable entities in, really, in tech, like, in the, in not even the game space, but the entertainment and tech space in general. So it's tough to think about what actually, or it's tough to think about what they can do in the sense of, you know, are they, I don't want to say, like, are they confident enough in themselves to kind of say, like, yeah, we have all these, we have all of these kind of gears turning and all these, you know, pistons firing that we can go and just kind of turn around and be like, yeah, we're going to make a Portal 3. And it doesn't matter if, you know, if you buy it once, like, okay, cool. There, if you play it one time, cool, you're done kind of thing. Because one, it'll sell a ton no matter what. But also two, for the fact of, we've seen that done really already a few times in recent history where they have made tons of money off it, even though they didn't necessarily, it wasn't staying power. Like, one of the best examples I think that are, that is out there right now in very recent memory is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, coming from EA, and EA has been always this notorious entity in microtransactions and live services and making you buy in and play one game all the time and dump all your money into this $60 game that you're already paying that much for. Then you're going to put another, you know, $3,000 into this game, just buying packs and this and that and yada, yada. And people always said, okay, at what point is it, you have enough that you can turn around and put these games out and put something else out and be happy with it? And it was Star, and one of the best examples was Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, that they put that out. There was no microtransactions, no season pass, no anything. Yeah, there was a deluxe version that you could buy. You got a couple of skins or whatever. Cool. That's it. There was no storefront in the game to go and buy more skins or anything like that. It was all unlockable things. And they just put it out. EA, one of the most, you know, they have been lauded the worst corporation in the U.S. multiple times. Like, that is an actual award they've won from outlets. But they put it out, and it was fucking a massive success. Actually, I want to look up real quick what it was, because I know it said great numbers. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order sales. So as of, let me just check this. So as of June of last year, so almost a year ago now, they surpassed 20 million players, and they've had over 10 million units worldwide sold. That's a fucking lot. That is a lot for a licensed product game, and also one that has no, it has no live service elements to it whatsoever. I mean, you're even having most games now at least have some live service elements to it. Outside of, you know, and even then, they still do. But outside of, you know, you look at Sony with their, you know, narrative-heavy third-person action-adventure IPs, exclusive IPs that they have, The Last of Us, Uncharted, God of War, things like that. Spider-Man was another one I was thinking. I knew there was one more right off the top of my head I wanted to mention. But you look at those, and yeah, there's some DLC that you can get and whatnot, but usually they're just single, they're just boom, in and out kind of experiences that you have. Outside of that, though, like, you look at that and you see the success that they have, and you look at EA and you see the success of games like Jedi Fallen Order has. These are entities that make money hand over fist, that you see it working. And it just shocks me that even at this point, like, now that we've seen Valve come out and say, like, or come out and put out a product after so many years of software that is met with rave reviews and, hey, this is the killer app for VR. This is the VR app you need to, this is what will make you go out and buy a VR headset or invest in VR, yada, yada. That we still haven't heard much of anything from them. Like, It just shocks me that they have so many people working for them. So many, like, people clamoring for more products from them, more software from them. Like, it boggles my mind that we haven't heard anything from them. And I'm kind of with you that it's like, cool, anything at this point is just icing on the cake, because I've kind of accepted for a long time, hey, you know, as a fan of Portal, as a fan of Half-Life, as a fan of all these single player traditionally IP that we're going to get from them, much like a Blizzard, you know, I understand I have to keep my expectations low now for what we're going to get from them because they're in a different era. Games are made different, or the design principles around game development are in a different place now on this high AAA level space. Things that are much more, you know, compared to what I thought of as a kid, teenager, whatever. But at the same time, too, the money justifies it. Like, you don't have to worry about, like, this is something that is going to be very much so profitable. Yeah, you're not going to make Steam money off of it, sure. But at the same time, too, like, I don't know, man. It just shocks me that I'm starting to get that little bit of a pull on the opposite side, though, of like, you clearly know that it works, especially too with VR being mm-hmm. such a very one-off platform, a very niche platform. But like, let's see, Half-Life, Alex sales. Or sales, there we go. So it's sold, not only are there 103,000 indexes out there now by this point, and it's probably more now because this was like a year or so ago, but they're looking at upwards of 5 million units sold on Half-Life Alyx. It's already past 2, and that was in 2020, obviously, like 6 months after. So they're looking at about close to five now from what they're estimating it at. I don't know, man. It shocks me we haven't heard more, but it seems like we are going to eventually hear more relatively soon from Valve on, you know, might not be. I don't know if we're going to see it. I would be shocked if we see a Portal 3 anytime soon. But also, too, hearing about them putting Portal on Switch also is kind of comforting. Like, that's cool. And whenever that popped up a few months back on the Nintendo Direct, I was like, don't give me hope. Listen, just don't give me hope. Don't do this fucking toe in the water bullshit. No. I'm not getting hope. I'll just be happy. I see which is crazy to fucking think right now. I see there's much more of a chance that we get a sequel to the Half-Life franchise, whether that's 3 or not. I don't think we'll ever see a Half-Life 3. It'll be something named different. It may be Half-Life 3, but it won't be Half-Life 3, I guess, if what I'm saying. I think we see more of a chance of another entry in Half-Life before we do Portal or anything like that. But I think, though, before any of that, we see CSGO come to Source 2 and at least have some kind of, I don't know if it's a rebrand or something like that, that we see Counter-Strike be brought back out on a new engine and everything like that.
I see tweets like every couple of days where like I forget exactly when it is, but like there'll just be tweets that are like, oh yeah, CSGO just crossed 1 million concurrent viewers.
Mm-hmm.
CSGO is like 6 years, 7 years old at this point, still hitting 1 million concurrent viewers with relative ease, and it just shows that like the proof's in the pudding when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, even here on, now this is from CSGO subreddit, but sources links to a tweet kind of talking about the whole thing in an article and whatnot, but sources: Valve will move CSGO to Source 2 pretty soon, rename it to Counter-Strike, so remove, you know, the Go aspect of it, but just making a broader blanket Counter-Strike, and change terrorists and counter-terrorists to T and CTs. So that's kind of interesting. But point being, the big thing, moving to Source 2 and kind of having this rebrand of making Counter-Strike just a platform in general, which I think is warranted to a degree. Like, I think that's understandable, and I think that's, you know, I think that makes sense in 2022 to do something like that. But I'm with you. Like, I'm just at this point now where I'm kind of numb to these gaming entities that I held so close to me for so long growing up, and, you know, in my teens and late teens years and college and whatnot, that I was so used to seeing. Every couple years, we're getting a new Valve game. Every couple years, we're getting a new Blizzard game. Every couple years, we're getting X, Y, and Z. That at this point now, knowing what that then became of, and knowing what the industry is at now, and how they're approaching development and whatnot, that I expect the worst, hope for the best kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Which sucks. I hate fucking thinking that way, because no matter what, I'm still going to be excited about anything I play. Just I'm that type of person, I guess, that when they put it out, I'm still going to be hyped or whatever, because eventually everything comes full circle. We probably are going to get a Portal 3 one day down the road. It may be 20 years from now, it may be 10 years from now, whatever. Like, we probably will. Same with a CSGO 2 or whatever you want to call it. We may get some kind of iteration coming out of it, like, of, or a Half-Life 3, like I said. But I just don't expect any of those things now, because Valve is in such a different place than it was 10 years, 5 years even ago, you know? So it is what it is, but I'm staying positive, but I expect it's, like I said, you hope for the best, but kind of expect the worst. If you keep your expectations low, you can never be disappointed. Though I do always think of the Malcolm in the Middle meme of what's his name, the little kid who's just like, I was expecting nothing and I'm still disappointed. Like,
I mean, to be fair, you do bring up valid points, but on the other hand, it could be like Ubisoft, where like they keep coming out with like new games They just keep slaughtering old franchises that just don't deserve it, but they just ruin them. Mm-hmm. So there's always that. At least they're not just pumping out games for money. And I guess Valve, in my eyes, has at least always been like, well, if we're not going to do it 100%, we're not doing it all.
You know what?
And
go ahead.
Which, like, I'd prefer that over Ubisoft just putting out abomination after abomination and then wondering why people are hating on them.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And to be honest, I do lean more in that favor, that I've always talked about, and we've always kind of been a very much like, hey, delay it and just, you know, sit on it or whatever. Like, wait till, like, take all the time you need is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, all those, that kind of approach to game development, like, hey, if it means I don't play this game for another 2 years or whatever, but it's fucking fantastic, that's great. Cool. Awesome. Like, I'm all for that. So, you know, we've always kind of been in that flavor. And I do agree with that, that it's almost like the discussion a lot of people are having with Star Wars right now, that, and even Marvel too, to an extent, even though I am much more confident in Disney to not let it go, or like that they have enough creative minds going with that, enough money to kind of make sure it doesn't. Disney has a certain piece or certain mind of quality that they have with their products that I like, at least when it comes to the media content. Not, I don't know about anything else besides like Disney World or whatever, but like the media that they do put out, there is a certain level of polish and quality that comes with it. But people saying with Star Wars of this mindset of when Star Wars was, you know, and I wasn't an 80s kid and I didn't grow up when they first came out, but I was there for the prequel trilogy and I was there for the sequel trilogy, that there was such barrenness between those releases. And even with the original trilogy where, hey, you got to wait 3 years between those movies, but there is nothing else that comes with that. And same with, you know, the prequel trilogy. There was 3 years between those. And sure, that's when you had Clone Wars and a couple things come up. But outside extended universe stuff, that was about it. Then you get to the sequel trilogy and Disney buying, you know, buying the property and them now doing all of these, you know, Disney Plus shows and games and things like that, that you're getting so much Star Wars canon content now. At what point is it going to get a little diluted and a little too much to the point of it's hurting the IP? And to me, I don't think it's there yet, personally, as a Star Wars fan. And same with Marvel as a comic guy. Like, I don't think they're really there yet. But I side in more of the camp of I even if it means I got to wait forever for it and its quality and whatnot, sit on it. Like, I'm okay with that at, you know, 29 years old now. Like, I could wait a while if it means, you know, hey, I'll just play something else or whatever. Like, it is what it is. Sure, I would love to play it now, but you know what? If it's going to be fucking fantastic and it's going to be a game that, like, Counter-Strike, where, you know, hey, if that means, or even too, like, thinking with, like, Blizzard or whatever, like, I'm excited for Diablo 4 and in Overwatch 2. Like, if that means those games are still, like, hey, this alpha comes by and it's kind of, and that means, hey, we don't see Overwatch for another year. Okay, cool. If it's great, I want the game to be fucking great. Like, I want that to be the game that I play. Like, that is maybe my go-to game for a couple years. Like, cool. That's what I want from a live service game. Like, I want you to make it well, but, and same with just single player content in general. Like, delay Breath of the Wild 2 for another 2 years if you need to. That's cool. I don't care, because I want the game to be fucking fantastic. Like, That's great.
At least Nintendo's like usually pretty good about that too, yeah, though.
True. Very true. And obviously COVID and the pandemic and whatnot didn't help any of this. Everything's all over the fucking place, but I digress. We're getting into the weeds of it a little bit. But Mike, I think that's gonna do it for our episode this week. So before we go off the rails even more, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet, talk about everything we talked about today, Portal and Half-Life and Valve and, you know, fucking Halo. Naturally, we got into it with that, of course. Where can people...
ourselves.
No, we can't. It's just a little nibble we had to give it. Where can people find you on the internet, talk about all the nerdy stuff we talked about today?
You can find me on Twitch at MP underscore Toy Soldier, or you can find me where the Bluebird Sings at TOYSXLDIER. That's Toy Soldier, but the second O is an X.
Great. And as always, I'm your host, Travis White, aka Travelus on most internet platforms, including at Travelus underscore on Twitter. That's TRAVLESS underscore. You can also find me streaming time to time on twitch.tv/Travelus_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can do so on pretty much any platform, but specifically Xbox Live at just regular old Travelus. That's TRAVLESS. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course, PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around those damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, and review us, all that jazz, wherever you get a podcast at, and follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast. Stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. And with that being said, Mike, that's going to do it for our episode this week. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening, sharing, and being a part of our growing community. Game on, wash your hands, listen to the doctors, Black Lives Matter, and we will see you next week.